Public Media. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. There have been efforts in 36 states to restrict education on racism and the contributions of specific ethnic groups to U.S. history. While legislation on what's broadly been called critical race theory, as in teaching about race and racism, not the specific academic discipline, while supposedly anti-CRT legislation passed last year in several states, this latest approach lies in arguing for what advocates call curriculum transparency. A trio of bills in Illinois being considered in the General Assembly would increase parental access to what's being taught in Illinois schools by requiring teachers to do things like post their lesson plans online. That's just one of many rallying cries on the right to exert more control over, or make transparent, what's happening in the classroom. Here's former Education Secretary Betsy DeVos.
Well, I'm very encouraged because I hear parents who are engaged and who want to be empowered to know and understand what their kids are learning, to have the ability to choose where their kids learn, how their kids learn. And, for 30 years, I've been advocating for parental empowerment. And in fact, the last year and a half, I've predicted that parents were going to eventually revolt when they learned what their kids were or were not learning during the lockdowns. And this campaign in this race in Virginia is really bringing into focus all of these issues that for decades actually have been building and accumulating. So I'm very encouraged for the future of kids and education because of this moment.
Advocates say this language, emphasizing the word transparency, it builds on a culture of mistrust, intended to lead parents into thinking something untoward is going on in their kids' schools. Others argue that ideas like these are a way to dissuade teachers from frank lessons on race, gender, sexuality, and religion. Joining us now to talk about their coverage of these bills is Samantha Smiley, state education reporter for Chalk Beat Chicago. Samantha, welcome to The 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Carol Tilley, professor of information science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Carol, welcome to The 21st Show to you as well.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And a little later in the program, we're going to be joined by State House reporter Peter Hancock from Capital News Illinois for a perspective from Springfield. But listeners, for now, we want to invite you to join our conversation. What questions do you have for our guests about these ideas calling for transparency in schools? Should lesson plans or book lists in libraries be subject to approval by parents? How closely do you monitor what the students in your life are being taught? Give us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21st Show. So, Samantha, you recently reported on these three transparency bills in the Illinois legislature. Can you walk us through briefly what would each of them do? What are they calling for?
Yes. So HB 5239 would require school districts to adopt a policy to ensure that a parent or guardian can request to review curriculum and learning material throughout the school year. Then there's this other bill that's called the Parental Access and Curriculum Transparency Act, or HB 5505, that is quite similar to that bill, but it goes a little bit further by requiring that school boards provide parents a clear process to object to what is being taught. And then another bill, the last bill, HB 5344, will require that all curriculum and learning materials used by schools are posted on the district's website. The bill also would allow parents to petition the school board at school board meetings and request parent-teachers conferences, and also require school libraries to maintain a list of books for parents and students to review.
So what's been the response to these ideas, this legislation, as you've been covering it?
Yes, as I've been talking to people, some of what they said to me is that, they don't think that these bills would go far. And so far they haven't. These bills were called to committee in February, but they haven't moved, and they even been sent back to Rules Committee. And some people just see it as, it's election year. This is a time for people to see where they can take the battle. And one of these spaces is just the legislature, but it you know, this also comes up at local school boards as well.
Yeah, there's a guy named Rich Miller who writes about Springfield who always has these blog posts. It's just a bill, right? Not necessarily going to pass in a Democratic supermajority legislature, but we are seeing states like Michigan and Indiana, right, Samantha? With similar bills being proposed there. Can you talk about that?
Yes, and Colorado. And those bills are very similar. Even the wording is very similar to what we saw in Illinois. Some of those bills, it looked like Colorado just, they weren't able to pass that bill further in their General Assembly. We're seeing, you know, still some movement happening in Michigan and Indiana, but, you know, it's hard to tell what will happen in those states as well.
Carol, I want to bring you into this conversation. You worked in K-12 education for years. You were a librarian. I understand you submitted in a witness slip in opposition to one of these bills. Can you talk about what are your concerns?
Sure. So as a school librarian and as someone who has taught folks who are going out to work in K-12 school libraries, one of my concerns is that by requiring this extra layer, particularly around posting a list of library and classroom reading materials online, that this is an effort that really duplicates a lot of work that school librarians already do. Almost every school library has an online catalog where anyone who is interested can search for materials. But by requiring what seems to be a secondary list, this really takes away time and energy that librarians have to do instructional work in classrooms, to support the needs of teachers and students along the way. And I really fear that ultimately this kind of call for transparency will have a chilling effect, that we're already seeing, you know, an extraordinary number of book challenges, especially in schools across the country. And many of these are being hastened by request for list of particular materials that some parents have and community groups have identified as offensive or obscene or pornographic or otherwise unsuitable for kids to have access to.
Yeah, I mean, is this just about, you know, doing a Command F, Control F search on a list for, you know, we had a conversation a few weeks ago talking about Mouse and The Bluest
Yes.
Eye and some of the books that are being banned?
Yeah, I really do think it is. I think that kind of list making does afford command line searching and scanning much easier. And again, like I said, there's almost every school district has an online catalog for their library materials. So I would rather see, you know, librarians be able to spend their time supporting and encouraging a love of reading, supporting and encouraging the work that is taking place in classrooms, and not on tasks that needlessly distract them from that.
I want to share a text message we got from one of our listeners. This is from John in Iliopolis, Illinois. He wrote, quote, I am a parent and retired teacher. I do not think teachers' lesson plans should be subject to approval by parents. Schools hire teachers who are trained in their subject areas. While parents should definitely be involved in their students' schools, most are not curriculum experts. If my daughter had ever come home with a questionable idea she'd learned from a teacher, parentheses, the Civil War was fought over states' rights, for example, we would have had a discussion on the subject. I would not have shown up at a school board meeting wanting to challenge the teacher. As a teacher, John goes on to say, I tried to choose books for my classes like Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, Anne Frank's Diary of a Young Girl, and Slaughterhouse-Five that challenged my students, and I'm sure that sometimes they squirmed a bit and felt uncomfortable. That's okay. As Huck says in one of his uncomfortable moments, it was enough to make a body ashamed of the human race. Carol, how do you imagine that these sorts of ideas could affect lesson plans or maybe alter the learning needs of individual students?
Well, I really do think that these bills provide more than sufficient opportunities for parents and community members to second guess educators, as John's message suggests. There's an idea that was developed by a sociologist at University of Chicago in the 70s. His name is Dan Lordy, and he wrote a book on the sociology of teaching. And in that book, he develops this idea called apprenticeship of observation. In the sense that, you know, we all spend this big chunk of our lives sitting as students in K-12 classrooms, and we leave that experience believing we understand something about what it means to teach and what goes on the other side of the desk. And what Lordy and others have argued or countered with is that we don't. It's like watching a play and assuming that by sitting in the audience seeing a play, we understand everything that's going on behind the scenes as well. And I worry that bills like these, when we already have learning standards that are readily accessible, when we already have districts who are posting curriculum online readily accessible, when we have catalogs for library and classroom materials that are readily accessible, that this is another sort of effort to sort of invoke that idea of the apprenticeship of observation, that parents and community members know equivalent or know more maybe than the teachers and librarians working in the schools.
All right, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about several proposals in the Illinois General Assembly and really a national movement in which advocates are calling for curriculum transparency, the idea that lesson plans ought to be posted online, library book lists ought to be more easily accessible and searchable online. There are three bills in Illinois by Republicans. They're not really advancing here. They are in other states. We're speaking about this with Carol Tilley, who's a professor of information science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Samantha Smiley, state education reporter for Chalkbeat Chicago. And we're joined now by Peter Hancock, statehouse reporter at Capital News Illinois. Peter, thanks for joining us today for a perspective from Springfield and some of the national conversation. And I want to begin by reading a text message from one of our listeners who wrote, "Everything should be subject to approval by parents. If it was up to me, there would be a live feed from every classroom. We pay the teachers to teach, not fill our kids' heads full of leftist expletive pushed by communist New World Order expletives," end quote. Peter, this is not a novel sentiment in this person who sent us this text message. What's the larger national conversation right now around this idea of transparency?
Well, Brian, first of all, I guess in the interest of full disclosure, I should note that in an earlier lifetime before I went into journalism, I actually was a high school social studies teacher. It was a different era back then. But, you know, at that time, I think our biggest challenge was getting parents to show up to parent-teacher conferences, getting any level of involvement out of parents. I mean, some parents were more involved than others. But I think now you're seeing, you know, kind of from the global perspective, a lot of pushback and against things that are now being taught. We're living in an age now where we're seeing Confederate monuments coming down in the South, the renaming of monuments and streets, et cetera, that are named after former slaveholders. There's kind of this whole new reckoning of race and of sexuality. And that is causing backlash from certain corners of our society. And so that's what you're seeing. Not so much in Illinois. I mean, we do have these bills. But in recent years, I think you've seen the Illinois General Assembly kind of moving the other direction, mandating more teaching of Black history, more teaching of Asian American history, more teaching, you know, a more honest or direct kind of teaching of race relations in the United States. So Illinois is kind of going in the other direction from these other largely Republican-led states.
All right, we need to take a break here. Peter, I hope you can stick with us after the break. We'll continue this conversation with Peter Hancock from Capital News Illinois, also Carol Tilley, professor at the U of I Urbana-Champaign, and Samantha Smiley, state education reporter for Chalkbeat in Chicago. 800-222-9455. We'd love to hear your perspective on what the students in your life are being taught. Do you feel like you're well connected to what they're hearing in the classroom? Or do you have... Maybe you're somebody who has concerns. You'd like to, you feel like you don't know quite as much as you'd like to about what your students are hearing. 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. Do please stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about a push for curriculum transparency in schools. There's legislation pending in Illinois. It's gotten further in other states that do not have supermajority Democratic legislatures. But this is an idea. It sort of dovetails with the so-called critical race theory, the idea of not the academic discipline, but really just the general idea of teaching about race and racism that's been much discussed in the news in the last year. And the idea would be that teachers would have to publish lesson plans, school libraries would have to make easily accessible lists of their books available online. One of the bills would even let parents petition the school board to object, to some of these books and lesson plans. We're talking about this with Peter Hancock, State House reporter for Capital News Illinois, Carol Tilley, professor of information science and a former school K-12 school librarian. And she's at the U of I Urbana-Champaign presently. And Samantha Smiley, state education reporter for Chalkbeat Chicago. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. That's 800-222-9455. Samantha, can you draw the line from the anti-critical race theory bills that were so much discussed last year and these, you know, transparency bills in Democratic states that are popping up now? Is this just a parallel effort? Is it all part of the same push?
It's all part of the same push, really. And also curriculum transparency bills are also taking place in some of those states that also had the anti-CRT bills as well. And the real parallel between the two was that they're really just trying to restrict what is being taught in classrooms, especially when it comes to topics around race, sexuality, gender, and so many other things. So that's what we're seeing. And we're really seeing the language that's being used here as a way to get more people invested into this versus like some of the CRT bills that kind of really pushed away some parents. But the curriculum transparency bill seems like the language used in them seems like, it's a way to bridge the gap between some parents who were totally against the CRT bills with parents who were for that and also for the curriculum transparency bills.
Peter, I want to read another text from another one of our listeners. Katie said, "This is an interesting topic. I monitor the reading and lesson material closely, but for the opposite reason as the book banners. I want to make sure diversity and inclusion are being discussed and represented. I monitor content to root out or redirect unconscious bias or overtly racist or sexist content." And Peter, it kind of reminded me of what you said about how the Illinois General Assembly has gone in the opposite direction from some of the states that are banning these sort of lessons and requiring more and more. I wonder if you sense, and you covered Kansas in the past, right? So you've had sort of a very red state and a very blue yes. state government coverage experience. You know, is there a backlash, do you think, is some of this response we're seeing a backlash to this push for inclusivity among groups in America today?
Well, that's part of it. I think, you know, you brought up Kansas, and I was there in the 1990s and early 2000s when there was a big push to controversy over the teaching of evolution in science classes. And there was a very conservative state board of education that tried to get the principles of evolution removed from the state's science curriculum standards. And I think you've seen this. There's really not that much new here, except the kind of form that it's taking. 1960s and 70s, there was pushback against material used in teaching sex education. We've had controversies over the teaching of evolution. We've had controversies over teaching of the Civil War and race relations. And so I think whenever a group of people feels that their way of life, their culture, their heritage is coming under attack from society generally, and public schools are a huge institution of society generally, then you start seeing pushback. And that's kind of what we're seeing now in this age when we're having a new reckoning about race, especially since the murder of George Floyd, a new reckoning about sexuality, the acceptance of homosexuality and transgenderism. You know, if people feel that their traditional way of life is coming under attack, and so they're pushing back against that.
Well, Peter, I know your time with us is short, but last year, Glenn Youngkin, who won the Virginia governorship by campaigning a lot on some of these education issues, do you see Illinois, and we should say that was a blue or purplish trending blue state that is now back with a Republican governor. Do you see Illinois Republicans hoping to make tread a similar path, if you will?
You know, I think the Republican Party here is it's pretty diverse in its ideology, but for the most part, it's a fairly moderate sort of party that believes in limited government, low taxes, minimal regulation. Of course, there's some social issues about abortion and other things, but I think the Republican Party here tends to be more moderate than what you're seeing in, especially in the South.
Peter Hancock is a State House reporter with Capital News Illinois. Peter, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's good to be here.
I want to continue our conversation by playing a listener voicemail we got. This is, let's just hear.
Hi, this is Joe from Champaign. I've lived through this sort of thing now for 20 years since the Reagan administration. We had evolution taken out of the schools. Chemistry was dumbed down so that it wouldn't contradict some people's misunderstood conception of the Bible. The Republican Party has worked for ignorance for the last 40 years, and they've made the American population far more ignorant.
You know, and we had a couple of other comments from listeners and thank you, Joe, for that message, by the way. Additional text messages. Franny said school boards, with the exception of Chicago, are usually elected by the community. The board is responsible for approving the curriculum. So what I would have to say that parents have always had a say in what their children are being taught. This legislation is just another form of banning books. Similarly, we got a question from somebody who said, isn't it the school board's job to decide on the curriculum? The parents should be voting for the school board members that align with their views. Carol, I wanted to ask you about something else related to this topic. One of these pieces of legislation, I understand, would give students the power to oppose a topic they're being taught. What do you mm-hmm. make of that?
You know, I think that I'm not necessarily opposed to amplifying student voices. In fact, I encourage, you know, young people to speak out and up. But I also worry that in some instances, students may be presenting their parents' ideas or their parents' ideology instead of speaking, you know, for their own views or their own perceptions. I think that would be my greatest fear.
I wonder, does this, and Samantha, maybe you have a sense, would that power extend to, you know, I think a lot of this conversation is about the humanities, right? But I mean, there is a non-zero percentage of people that still believe the earth is flat. You know, could people push back against that sort of teaching in school under this legislation as you read it?
I think so. I do. It would be interesting to see if that pops up because yes, some of the conversation has been happening about in English class, in social science classes, not so much in the sciences, but I mean, it could happen for the sciences as well.
Carol, what about you? I mean, did you ever encounter parental resistance to science, humanities, when you were working in the library?
You know, I didn't. As Peter alluded, I think the biggest challenge that I saw when I was working as a high school librarian, and I think many of my former colleagues and current friends who are teachers would say, it's just simply getting parents into schools, you know, that is the challenge. I think that almost any teacher I have ever met welcomes the opportunity to discuss classroom issues with parents, welcomes the opportunity to discuss student performance and how we can support young people. I think often parents don't have the time or can't make the time, whatever it is. So my experience was that there was very little parent involvement during my time as a K-12 teacher.
I want to read another text message we got from a listener who says, quote, as a librarian, I recognize that parents regularly constrict and intentionally limit their child's access to information, probably out of love and a sense that their role is protection. Our public schools and our public libraries, on the other hand, are built to empower our young people to build community and critical thinking. Think of it as parents doing spoon feeding. Schools teach a wide variety of topics, and then libraries let them follow their interests more deeply. For instance, if a child is interested in astronomy, a child can find more books on astronomy in the shared collection than what their parents and teachers have time to learn with the child. It takes a village to raise a child. Carol, can you respond to that message?
I just want to say yes, loudly. I really appreciate that sentiment, and I think that libraries, whether they're school libraries or public libraries or other forums, are places for exploration, for inquiry, for curiosity. And I don't want to see that limited or hampered. Parents always have the opportunity to have conversations with their children, to guide them in terms of reading materials. But I would hate to see opportunities limited for some children because a parent disagrees or disapproves of a particular book or a particular content area or a particular theme. I think that the opportunity to explore and learn through libraries is one of the greatest greatest opportunities we have currently.
Samantha, how could the passage of these bills, if they were to pass, and again, I know you said that's not likely here in Illinois, and we should be frank about that, but if they were, if ideas like these were implemented in the future, school districts, individual charter schools, how could they be affected financially?
That's a really good question, because I don't think anyone has really talked about the financial implications, but something that I think about is what happens if the school buys into the curriculum or buy tons of books. And then as they're teaching curriculum, someone says, or a group of parents and students say, like, actually, we don't want to talk about this subject, and we shouldn't have these books. And the school district already spent that amount of money to get all of that. I think that would be kind of shocking, especially school districts that aren't adequately funded already. That's all I can think of.
Yeah, right, I suppose now. There's the investment maybe in teacher time too, right? Posting.
Yeah.
Do the teachers even have formal, you know, every paragraph of their lessons mapped out necessarily, right?
Right. And you know, things change in a classroom. So like, even if a teacher might have like their year planned out based on the need of their students, maybe they might have to change a lesson plan quickly, or, you know, teachers have told me that they've had to change what they were going to do in a classroom based on some news that has happened. So they might have gotten rid of that lesson plan, or, you know, yeah, it's really hard at the local level to really like implement some of this stuff that people are asking for. And it's a lot. I think there are some ways that teachers can go around it.
Interesting.
Some backups, yeah.
Yeah. So we got another comment on Twitter while we were talking. Says, when I was in college, I was told by teachers that students could disagree with what was being taught, generally on religious grounds, but we still had to know the material well enough to pass the tests on it. That's fair, she said. Let's go to the phones. Line 4, Randy is calling from Peoria County. Randy, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what my take is, and I put a big family through high school not too long ago, and have a grandchild now in school that we're quite involved with. And as I listen to the folks that want to limit information, I found what was good, and what I came to do was to ask how they could add different things that I thought might be better to add, and I could deal with it, something that might be that I thought didn't meet my own little particular sensibilities. We'll deal with that ourselves. And what I was concerned about is what needed to be added. Example was my daughter, of course, I thought was very talented, and the sun rose and set in her. She was quite talented with math and science and things, and not always welcome at the time. And she wanted to take physics and advanced physics and so on. And we, for some reason, they had kept not making that possible. So I just found I could sign her up for an extension class one summer for the basic physics. And then she got into advanced physics. All the rest were boys. Not bad for her social life. And she, just graduated with a master's degree in aeronautics and space engineering or whatever from the University of Florida.
Nice.
We were very happy to go down there. Now, here's
Randy, I'm sorry, I need to cut you off. I appreciate you sharing your perspective, but I'm afraid we are just about out of time for that conversation. I think that's a good note to end on, right? Expand the educational opportunities. If you don't like what's being taught, well, maybe you can suggest expanding it rather than trying to block it from going into the kids' minds. I want to thank Professor Carol Tilley from the U of I Urbana-Champaign in information science there, and Samantha Smiley, education reporter for Chalkbeat Chicago. Thank you so much for being with us, and we have to leave it there. More to come here on the 21st after a short break. Stay with us.